Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Have you heard of nagflation or a seagull manager? How about cockroach theory? A new book sets out to share some choice and arcane business lingo. Some will pass, some will stick around. Any bit of it may give us an insight into American business outlooks and attitudes today. So let's jump the shark, boil the frog, run it all up the flagpole, and see who salutes. This hour On Point, from phrasing to eat what you kill, business buzzwords, and our corporate culture. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Gregory Bergman. He's an associate editor at Equities Magazine and author of the new book, Biz Words, From Ad Creep to Zero Drag, A Guide to Today's Emerging Vocabulary. Gregory Bergman, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Okay, so here we go. You've got a bunch of words here, and we're going to dive in and look at them. See what makes the cut, what doesn't, what's just silly, and what may tell us something. To help us do that, also joining us from San Francisco is Paul Hemp. He's a senior editor at the Harvard Business Review, author of the articles Avatar-Based Marketing and Are You Ready for E-Tailing 2.0? They sound like catchphrases themselves. Paul Hemp, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from San Francisco, Kara Swisher. She's a well-known Silicon Valley watcher and technology columnist for The Wall Street Journal, founder, producer, and host of the journal's annual D, All Things Digital Conference, and author of There Must Be a Pony in Here Somewhere. Kara Swisher, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Gregory, you're under the microscope. We've got some real pros to listen to what you've produced here. We started diving in, dipping into the book. So begin to take us through. Seagull Manager, what's that?
A seagull manager is a manager that, like a seagull, comes in, swoops on in, and defecates everywhere. Not exactly the most helpful manager.
In other words, on everybody below him.
On everyone below him, right.
Cockroach theory?
Cockroach theory, give me one second here. There's a lot of words in here. Cockroach theory is a... It is my book, that's true. But not my theories, but I think I did a good job explaining them. it's a market theory that states that bad news tends to be released in bunches, you know, the same way that cockroaches, you don't find, if you find one, you can be pretty sure there's going to be more on their way.
So if there's a little bad news, watch out for more. How about phrasing? That was a new one to me.
Yeah, phrasing is something I think we're all familiar with. That's... It's sort of frantic multitasking that people do. When they come into the office, they have their BlackBerry on, they have their phone on, they get emails. Sort of the more things we have to do, we think we're multitasking, and we think we're doing a lot of things at once, when in fact we're essentially doing nothing and wasting time.
Frantic, ineffective multitasking, phrasing, and this one, eat what you kill.
Eat what you kill. That's sort of the brokers, you know, or any occupation based on commission. That's, you know, eat what you kill. You don't get a salary. If you don't do well, you don't eat. Real estate, you know, stockbrokers, anyone that works purely on commission, car salesmen, they all know this term very well.
Sounds like the American way, at least lately, for an awful lot of people. There's a lot more in here, and we'll look at it. But, Kara Swisher, you live in sort of the heartland of the new hot phrase and the suggestion that there are big ideas to come with those phrases. You must have seen many generations come and go by now, Kara.
It never stops. It's the other thing we make besides computers is ridiculous catchphrases to go with theories of whatever the latest web idea of the moment is. And there's a lot of them, I can tell you, from way back in the beginning to now today, and there's plenty today.
When can we learn something from these, Kara, and when are they just, you know, passing fancies?
Well, they're all passing fancies, really. I mean, you know, we're now in Web 2.0. We were in Web 1.0 before, and we're about to move into Web 3.0, even though there's nobody to say why we're particularly... It's the same industry, but they need to have an idea that they're constantly moving forward, so they need these new phrases to feel as that they're inventing something, you know, the new thing kind of thing.
Paul Hemp,
makes them feel better, I guess.
I guess. Paul Hemp, how do you look at these? I mean, some in business stick around for a long time. I mean, bootstrapping and dog and pony show and, I don't know, number crunching and on the same wavelength, even robbing Peter to pay Paul, zero-sum game. Some of these have a half-life that's not short at all, but others, I don't know how long phrasing will be with us. How do you look at them, Paul?
Well, I think there's a balance that we try to observe in putting together management articles. One is that there is a kind of utility in buzzwords, business buzzwords, biz words, in which they can really encapsulate an idea. And you think of something like golden handcuffs, cash cow. There's something vivid about what that means, and it mm-hmm. actually portrays in a real shorthand way a good word. Obviously, they can also obscure meaning. The fact that the person who's saying using the term doesn't even know what he or she's talking about. So there's two sides to the coin, and I think you want to be looking when a phrase falls, which side it falls on.
And why does the business world seem to be so taken with these phrases? What I mean, every walk of life has them. We said so right at the top. But the business world in particular seems to just churn and churn and manufacture these as carousels. It's what Silicon Valley makes, maybe second in volume after high tech.
One word?
Yes.
Consultants.
What? Why?
Well, I think consultants, they have a generic service, and they're always trying to use a buzzword. They're always trying to productize their consulting services and turn them into branded, proprietary products that they can offer clients. And so I think that is a big driver, actually, in the business and management world of the drive to create these terms. And some of them actually are pretty vivid and illustrate. We've actually been talking recently. This is not from a consultant, but we've been talking about had articles about off ramps and on ramps for women in career off ramps and on ramps for women in business.
Right.
Well, that just is so vivid about what the path or the journey of many professional women are.
In other words, maybe when they want to take a break for kids, if they want to take a break for kids, off ramp, on ramp, and off we go. Carrie, in your neck of the woods.
Also,
oh yes,
they get stuck in traffic sometimes once they've got off the freeway and find it hard to get back on.
Hard to get back on. Who are the real producers in your neck of the woods, Kara, of the new lingo? Is it consultants? Is it people who want to publish?
No.
Is it?
No, it's these web companies. They like to try to create the new idea. I mean, right now the big term was started by Facebook, which is social graph, which is essentially saying your friends, you know, your group of friends. But it's the idea of who you know, that old Breck commercial, they told two friends and so on and so on and so on. And so they use the term social graph to describe that. And in doing that, they're obviously trying to make a business, and they're not trying quite hard enough as far as I'm concerned. But they use a word now called infotisement, which is information in advertisements that's helpful to you. Which advertising was supposed to be before, but they want to get the idea that social networking has special magical advertisement that somehow is better than other advertisement, which it's not. But they're making up words because they're trying to create a whole new, the social networking trend, which is a trend as old as the hills. They want to make it seem like it's very new and very fresh.
And off we go. Gregory Bergman, you've got the book here, and we're going to get some thumbs up and thumbs down from our expert panel.
I wanted
panel.
To add
yes,
something,
please.
if possible.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's consultants or who drives these words, but I think that the main reason why it's so popular is that it really separates, or it's supposed to separate, the insiders from the non-insiders, you know. And I think that's why these new terms continue to be so popular, because business people, want to separate who they think are insiders of the industry and who aren't.
But some of these seem to me to try a little too hard. You could sound like a real dope rolling some of these out. I mean, they've got a half-life of 2 seconds, and maybe they appeared in one magazine article one time and they're gone, don't they?
Right. That's why you have to be very careful which ones you choose to use. And not only is it helpful for someone to sound like an insider, knowing these terms will also help you, distinguish, determine who really doesn't know what they're talking about, if all they do speaking these terms, if someone says, that dot's not was a real, arrow shooter. I mean, you should have heard his elevator pitch. I mean, we'll put some pants on it and, do a little viral marketing and throw it over the wall. And
Okay. We can take
that in a meeting.
Arrow shooter? What the heck is that?
that's someone with a big idea shoots like an arrow. You know, and you hear people like this in meetings all the time. I would put some pants on it.
What's if that? Put some pants on it. What was it?
Put
naked?
Some pants and filling the missing details. You know, beef it up.
So you've given me an elevator pitch, just sketched out in 60 seconds. But later on, you got to put some pants on it, fill in the details.
Right. Put some pants on it. Do something with it. But of course, if you turn to someone and say, "What kind of pants? You know, are you referring to? Do you have any idea what you're actually talking about?" Some people may have to say no. And that's why it's important to know, you know, who's just throwing these terms around. And in order to know if they're throwing them around, you know, you have to know the terms.
So. Kara Swisher, put some pants on that for us. I mean, how much patience do you have at this point for folks who lard their lingo with this stuff?
Well, I'm so used to it. You go to parties and you have to listen to this sort of these pants type things all the time. I mean, sometimes it's actually businesses trying to save themselves, too, and trying to give a new idea of where they're going. I mean, Yahoo right now has a million new phrases of what it's doing. Their biggest one, which is inexplicable to most people here, is starting point. They want to become they had a list of ideas of what they were, even though everybody knows what Yahoo is, but they decided to, in fact, hire some consultants and come up with some catchphrases. And they said they wanted to be the starting point on the Internet for most consumers. Now, everybody understood that means homepage or UPN. Yeah. They had to come up with this starting point phrase that seemed, you know, rather grand compared to what everybody already intuitively knew what they did. It's just they weren't going to the starting point of Yahoo as much as they used to.
Is that going to save their bacon, Kara?
No, I don't think so. I think what they've got to do is they've got to get more people using it. That's, you know, and more people, you know, searching on their terms. Unfortunately, one term that has actually gotten into the popular lexicon, Google, is sort of has sort of taken the shine off of Yahoo, so to speak. So there's nothing to do about Google because it actually has crossed. That's a word that's a company that's crossed.
Now it's a verb itself. We'll look at much more. Gregory Bergman, Kara Swisher, Paul Hemp, please stand by. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about business buzzwords, from ankle biter to Zen mail, and what they tell us about where our workplace heads are at. Gregory Bergman is with us from Los Angeles. He's author of the new book, Biz Words, From Ad Creep to Zero Drag, A Guide to Today's Emerging Vocabulary. And we've got kind of an expert panel with us as well. Paul Hemp, senior editor at the Harvard Business Review, joins us today from San Francisco. And Kara Swisher, technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal, author of There Must Be a Pony in Here Somewhere. Gregory, I hope you'll take us on through some of what you've got here. We just tossed out ankle biter and Zen mail. What have you got there?
Well, ankle biter is a term for companies that have a market cap of under $500 million. So a lot of people would refer to them as a small cap company, market capitalization.
Paul Hemp, what's implicit in the characterization? These are little guys down around our ankles.
I would say implicit in what makes the phrase, gives it a little buzz, if you will, or an edge, is the fact that not only the little guys down around the ankle, but they can make your life miserable by nipping away at your heels or your some other part of your extremities.
Right. Grass ceiling. What have you got there, Gregory?
Grass ceiling is, a play on glass ceiling. Refers to the barrier that women have in professional golf.
Professional golf or just golfing with the boss? They don't do it. Somebody else does. Maybe a guy, and there's the barrier.
Right. Golfing in general, it's a lot of business is done in the racquetball court, in the on the golf course, and in the health club, and women don't have aren't in that sort of old boys network. They're not allowed to sort of get those business deals. They're not in that world. And, the golf world is the business world. And if you don't let her on the course, she's not going to, be able to get those new opportunities.
There's a G word. Let's go to some D words here in your lineup. Deer market, D mall, Dorito syndrome. Start from the last. What's Dorito syndrome?
Dorito syndrome is, I'm sure everyone's had it, one too many Doritos before. And they fill you up, but they don't exactly make you feel good. And you sort of feel like you haven't eaten anything, just a sort of feeling of dissatisfaction and emptiness.
And in the business world, meaning?
In the business world, it means it's a sort of mental bloatedness you feel if you just spend a lot of time performing a task that has no benefit. you know, if you surf around the internet and don't actually get anything done. Just a feeling of, you know, dissatisfaction and emptiness that comes with, you know, fooling around on the internet.
A deer market, a Wall Street phrase here, something, a market in between a bull and a bear, kind of a deer in the headlights. That's pretty easy to get, but illustrative in an interesting way. D-mall, here's a new trend. Tell us, what's the word got in it?
Well, D-mall is taking what used to be, you know, malls used to be very popular. Now you see a lot of stores outside making, you know, outside malls as opposed to inside malls. And, you know, this is very popular in warmer places like California or Florida. You'll see, you're not seeing these big malls being constructed anymore. You're seeing outside malls.
Well, for that matter, old malls torn down and giving way to the outside. I've seen that. And here's another, right. a dot snot. What's a dot snot?
A dot snot is, you know, a rich kid that made a lot of money from in the internet boom.
Paul, what do you like there? Anything? What have you got?
I was kind of harking back as I was thinking about those. A lot of the ones Greg's do are clever and kind of cocktail party conversational gambits. But there are ones that people, as you suggested earlier, people use in meetings to try to impress people or as a useful shorthand. I remember one of the great business buzzwords of all time, re-engineering, which, if you recall, all right. You know, was not just improving business processes but reinventing them. And it became so common that it not only obscured meaning, it obscured the fact that there really, for many people, there was no meaning. I remember a really well-known consultant saying, basically, I'll use reengineering for whatever clients want it to mean. And so it's not just that they can obscure meaning, but they can obscure the fact that, at least in the speaker's mind, they really have no meaning.
And these things come and go. Reengineering, I sort of associate, I don't know, with late 80s or early mid-90s?
Early to mid-90s, yeah. It was actually a very influential idea, but over time, all meaning was kind of drained out of it. And to go back to Greg's point, if you were still using it at the turn of the millennium, you look like you forgot you were left behind in whatever it is. Rust Belt rather than Silicon Valley.
And the language Rust Belt, maybe. Right, listeners, right. You can join us at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What's the talk that gets you going in the business world these days? Some very colorful here, Gregory. You've got prairie dogging. I mean, once you've had it described, you know exactly what it is, but give it to us.
Oh, prairie dogging is the sudden appearance of when someone, you're sitting at the cubicle and you see your friend or neighbor pop up like a prairie dog and sort of see what's going on.
So all the poor cubicle slaves are down at their work and suddenly everybody's head pops up over the cubicle walls and something interesting or noisy happens.
Right. It's a perfect sort of visual of what goes on in a very sterile sort of office environment where you just see, you know, little gray cubicles and the occasional face popping out of them.
Matador, another one you've got here for a particular kind of employee in an office setting?
Yes. Matador. One second. I'm sorry about that.
Not at all. It's I got it right here, and you've got it nice. A person who is skilled at dodging assignments and responsibility. I mean, that's got to be as old as time. That you've always got people like that in a workplace.
But ever since you've had responsibility, you've had people dodging it.
Still.
And I was responsible for knowing all these terms, and look what I'm doing.
You're not being a very good matador.
Right. I know. Well, I wanted to embody one of these terms. I just happened to pick this one, which was the most, one of the best ones to choose. People that just dodge everything that comes their way and do whatever, the bare minimum to get by.
Kara, are there classics or great ones that have stuck with you?
Yeah, there's some really interesting ones that are coming back. I think, in Silicon Valley right now, the word widget is very hot. And that's all those things like the iPhone apps or the things on Facebook. They're third-party apps that are you put on devices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an old word from, business school or from Hollywood musicals, How to Succeed in Business. People are making widgets. And so a lot of people are making widgets and actually trying to make businesses doing them. And they're it's a really meaningful word, actually, right now, because these are real businesses being built selling widgets. And there's companies called the Widget Company and all sorts of things. So I think you can take a word that seems ridiculous and actually give it some real meaning. Now, I don't know how long widgets are going to remain around, but it certainly is an important word right now. As opposed to, say, brand ambassador, that's another one I've been hearing lately, that the consumer, again, with social networking, they're trying, you know how on Facebook you might recommend you're on a mountain bike, and then you say, I use this mountain bike, and then your friends might hear that you use it, and you're a better ambassador than just a regular advertising. And so they're trying to sell the notion that consumers are brand ambassadors. I think it sounds like the 10th ring of hell to be stationed as a brand ambassador, but they actually use it quite frequently. It drives me nuts because I think consumers do not want to be brand ambassadors. I mean, they may like a product, but they don't want to necessarily flack it.
A grand title for what they wish you would do. We're looking at business buzzwords, the latest, the grandest, those that last, and those that don't. Join us with your favorites word. 800-423-8255. Let's take a call from Boston. Kristen is with us. Kristen, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call very quickly. First of all, I'm not in the business world. I'm in the restaurant service industry. And it's funny to me because I know that there is a lot of money that's thrown around the business world. And it sounds to me like there's a lot of time being spent coming up with terms to describe all the people that are slacking in the business world. And I don't know. It's amusing to me. It sounds like a big waste of time, all these words. Sounds like there's more words explaining all the people that are not working than there is actually work being done. You know what I'm saying?
Right, sitting around making up funny terms for things that aren't happening or should be but aren't, or the process itself.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to me. It's just a little ironic, and I just wanted to mention that. So that's it.
Kristen, we got it. Thanks. Multi-slacking, right along that vein, Gregory.
I call it the lexicon of the lazy. There's just tons of these kinds of, from multi-slacking to screen sucking, to...
Multi-slacking, you say, having two browser windows open, a personal site and a work-related one so that you can quickly click to the legitimate site when a manager is nearby. And screen sucking, what's that?
Screen sucking is just staring at a computer as if it was sucking you in. I mean, doing absolutely nothing on the internet, just really sort of zoning out and being sucked in by the World Wide Web and nothing in particular. And then there's sunlighting, which is doing your own personal work, personal business at work. There's throw it over the wall, which is one of my favorites, that, you know, if you just throw it to another department, even though it's probably your responsibility. There's, you know, just a ton of these sort of, you know, like I call it the lexicon of a lazy. There's just a ton of these terms.
Paul, let me turn to you for a second here. I mean, a lot of these can sound kind of goofy, like people with too much time on their hands making them up. On the other hand, I spend a little time in this terrain, and you can be in some very serious, high-tier business meetings, and, you know, the right phrase at the right moment will be tossed out by quite experienced people and sort of move it along, as you say, with defining a dynamic that everybody knows or asserting a certain kind of hipness, even if it's not quite as cute as some of these. I mean this is a regular part of business communication.
Right. I think that is part of the tension, is if you're in, to use a somewhat of a jargony buzzword, if you're in a community of practice, a group of people who all know what each other is talking about and are aware of their environment, then you can use this shorthand and save a lot of time in explaining things once somebody coins a shorthand that captures the idea very vividly. The problem is then, and this is a problem in academia as well as business, obviously, if you start wanting to talk to people outside of that, your sphere, then you're excluding them. It becomes an exclusionary word. And there is that balance.
But when you're in the biz, I mean, if one venture capitalist calls up another and says, hey, I got a 10-bagger here, or we're on to one, it may be tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, they're looking at making 10 times their money in a short period of time, and that's exactly what they want to do.
There is kind of an informational aspect in the buzzword, and that you convey, maybe there's a lot of information packed into a single word or phrase once it becomes commonly used. But it also, the little bit of edge that Greg is featuring in his book, the humorous or the edgy quality of it, It says something about the tone of the environment or the business in which you're working, the kind of irreverent world of VC and...
The new words, are some of the more important new words people are using are actually rather significant. I mean, there's one that they're using out in Silicon Valley now called just the ecosystem, that everything is an ecosystem. And it's an old word, and it's about the whole world.
Yeah.
But it's a concept that now the Internet and its players are no longer competing with each other. You know, the old they're in a co-opetition kind of thing where they need each other and they're trying to point at each other. And so it's an ecosystem. And again, the social networks tend to exemplify that you have social networks themselves, you have the applications makers, you have, you know, also the content makers. So it's more of it's a very important idea that you have to be thinking about in how the business is shifting or how people want the business to shift.
So here's a kind of a very contemporary business culture that's being described, even if it's hard to pin down. But how then, let's take another one that was a generation or more back now. What's the difference in between synergy and ecosystem?
Oh, that's different. Synergy is when you have different things that should work together within a company. Typically, is that, say, AOL Time Warner, that's what my book was about, they were supposed to take the Internet assets and help turbocharge the offline assets like magazines and cable systems and stuff like that.
Kind of 1+1=3.
Right, and it equaled -27, unfortunately,
right.
For everybody involved. But an ecosystem does describe an idea that, you know, in the old days they had another term, portals. Yahoo was a portal.
Sure.
Excite was a portal. It doesn't exist anymore, really, in the same
mm-hmm.
way. And so they were individual portals that you went through to get to the Internet kind of thing. Now there's this idea of a big ecosystem where everybody moves from one link to the jumps from, you know, link jumping from one place to the next. And it is certainly true. It's definitely a shift in how businesses are made, where they rely on each other much. You know, the Apple computer system is an ecosystem that's perfect right now. It's working beautifully because the iPod works with the iPhone, works with the computer, works with the software and everything else. And so they're being looked at, for example, as a perfect ecosystem, a sealed ecosystem, really.
And, Paul, there's where it gets serious to kind of keep tuned in to the latest subtle changes in business dynamic, ecosystem, co-opetition. I mean, it can be BS, but it can also be a heads up to something shifting in the winds of what's working.
Yeah, I think they are. I think they are bellwethers in a way of shifts in the really kind of often subtle shifts in the way business and management are conducted. I do think, I was thinking when Kara said ecosystem, though I had actually edited a piece several years ago about business ecosystems, and I realized another danger of these terms is that they will be used in different ways. People will have different meanings for them. A classic example to me is disruptive innovation, which was the Clay Christensen's idea.
Sure.
Originally an HBR article, but that actually had a fairly nuanced aspect to the type of not very sophisticated innovation that could knock the really super sophisticated technology companies off their block. But people widely use that term just to mean any new technology today. And so two people using that term simultaneously might be talking past each other.
The fine edge can get lost, and pretty soon it's just revolution all over, blood in the streets, or something, a blunt instrument, that phrase.
Right, exactly.
The point he's making is they weren't really disruptive, they were just annoying, you know, and that's different. You know, there's very few truly disruptive companies that come along every year in technology, at least.
And you've got to watch out, though. Sometimes this stuff is very serious. Ninja loan is in here. It came from the mortgage lending world, acronym for no income, no job or assets, super subprime loan, as you write, Gregory Bergman. And we're all living with the results of the time in which that was in play, ninja loans and the terminology. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking about business buzzwords this hour, from ankle biter to Zen mail, and what they tell us about where our workplace heads are at these days. Gregory Bergman is with us. His new book is BizWords. We're also joined by Paul Hemp, senior editor at the Harvard Business Review, and Kara Swisher, joining us both from San Francisco, technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal, author of There Must Be a Pony in Here Somewhere. Lots of folks want to join us. Let's go to them. Shelley in Anaheim, California. You're on the air, Shelley.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I think that the lingo adds imagery to what would be boring or abstract business world. I think it helps people have images of what's going on in the world. And I work for a wholesale distributor, and one of our favorite ones to use centers around a bus. Like, the people working in the warehouse, are they on the right seat of the bus? Is the manager a good driver of the bus? And when somebody does something bad or wrong, we throw them under the bus.
Right.
And it's hilarious, but it makes sense to us.
Shelley, I hear you loud and clear, a way of giving a kind of an interesting, catchy patina surface to life, and sometimes about really tough stuff. Paul Hemp being thrown under the bus is nobody's idea of a good time.
No, there's no doubt about what that ultimately means.
You're taking the fall, as they would have said back in, gangster movie days?
Or in days of boxing, I guess, probably.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I think interesting is the way in which people try to claim credit for phrases. Some are kind of undisputed. I mean, Tim O'Reilly and Web 2.0, but there are. It seems like as soon as a phrase becomes really popular, there's a debate about who actually coined it. And actually, harking back to that old phrase, reengineering, I remember asking the co-authors of the book actually who had coined this phrase that had just taken. And they both claimed credit for it, although one of them admitted that the other person might have been in the room when the birth was given to the phrase. But as somebody, you know, I've tried to do it myself because Kara would probably, launch a few phrases myself. And some of them work, some of them don't. E-tailing 2.0 disappeared without a trace.
But it was yours, baby.
It was mine. It was my ugly baby.
And avatar-based marketing.
That's got done a little better.
Presenteeism. I've never tried to launch a word. I get inundated with them, so I just prefer to hear them as they go.
But have you seen the duels that go on out there over bragging rights, over authorship, Kara?
Even the Web 2.0 thing gets debated back and forth of who's driving. John Battelle is another person who takes credit for that one.
Right.
But it's from an old idea of multiple versions of a software. But, you know, the 1.0 version, the 2.0 version. So they're using an already current business practice in use for software that's been around since the beginning of software. But what's interesting to me is when you think about a lot of the digital ones, they have to do with traveling, you know, like on the information superhighway.
Yes.
Or moving, surfing, for example. Now, these are useful terms now. I mean, you don't even think about browsing and surfing. And when you never, someone coming here if they woke up and they were asleep for 20 years, when you say, I'm surfing, they would say, well, why are you surfing? Like, they used in Montana. So I think a lot of these are browsing, another word that's sort of a dull word that's become very critically important to, you know, everything pretty much. So what's interesting is taking words that existed and reformatting them for the future, and most of them are incredibly dull words like browsing.
But everybody knows what they mean, and they become very useful in that way. Let's go to Pittsburgh,
sure,
Pennsylvania, and Chuck. Chuck, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that happens with phrases like this is they're used for code. One of the codes we use kind of in the advertising business is Groundhog Day. And if you remember that movie with Bill Murray where he has to keep experiencing the same miserable experience every day.
So what's it mean in advertising, Chuck?
Well, what happens it happens a lot when we're doing financial work and to kind of rationalize why we're working with a particular client. And we have these supervisors or executives who come to us on a monthly or monthly basis and ask us to go through our financials, waste our time for about 2 or 3 days proving why we should actually be investing into this particular business. And, you know, the rest of the organization knows it's Groundhog Day. And so you end up going back, you end up emailing everybody saying, oops, now we're back into that swing where we're going to stop doing our productive work and go back to the company and try to rationalize why we're doing all of this.
Right. Here we go, the day you don't want to have over and over again, but yet you do. Chuck in Pittsburgh, thanks for calling. Let's get another from New Jersey, Bridgewater, New Jersey. Ashish, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My example relates to digital technology taking over and completely changing your experience. So you need to create a new buzzword or bizword to show that this is something really new and different. For example, telepresence instead of video conferencing. How many of us have had really bad experiences with video conferencing But now you want to talk about high definition or holographic video conferencing, you do need to create a new buzzword.
And you're saying telepresence. You're saying telepresence instead of video conferencing because the technology's changed. You want to convey that it's something better, newer, crisper, and so it's telepresence.
Absolutely.
Marketing power in that, Kara Swisher. Certainly, if someone didn't have a good time with video conferencing, telepresence sounds omnipresent.
Right. Yeah, telepresence is another one that's been around for a long time, actually. But the idea is, online presence is sort of a big idea. The idea that you have a presence online all the time, 24/7. And I think the word presence is about to become very big. The idea that, especially as mobile becomes so important in Web 3.0, that you're going to have an idea of where your presence, your digital presence, is at any point. So it's more than tele, because tele is telephone essentially, mm-hmm. but it's a digital presence that you're going to have that it's going to move around with you as you move around these various devices and places and things like that.
Gregory Bergman, clearly making some marketing distinction here, as Ashish says, is the goal behind no small number of these phrases. Say this is different. This is new. Of course, it doesn't stay new forever.
No, and that's why we talked about earlier, a lot of these terms just come and go, as opposed to some of the older ones that we have in here. And I tried to include some of the old tried and true and some of the newer ones and some of the hipper ones and ones that you know are going to be fly-by-night. And I think that's most of the new terms are Internet-related, and they are about marketing, and they are about distinguishing one's company from the next, and some of these will last, some won't, most won't.
You've got some fun ones in here. Zen Mail, we mentioned, jargon for the email message without text or attachments. We've all sent or received those by accident. It's kind of weird moment. There's the Ono second, which I thought was wonderfully descriptive. Define that one for us, Gregory.
Ono second is really applies to everything, not just business, but the second when you say, oh, you know, no, what did I do? And speaking of email, now sending a Zen mail is, embarrassing enough without an attachment or without any text, but sending an email about someone and forwarding to them by accident and something that's negative, I think we can all have had that oh no second.
Right, that little bit of time it takes you to realize that you've just made a big mistake and you can't get it back. Some are descriptive maybe about where technology is going. Yottabyte you've got in here. That was the first I'd run across it. Oh, Kara, I hear you there.
Yeah, I'm saying one of them that I just recently, and it's a former researcher at Microsoft, has one called continuous partial attention to sort of describe the state of being constantly, either you're looking at the BlackBerry, you're on the phone, or you're looking at your computer. And so you're in a state, especially young kids are in a state of continuous partial attention.
Oh, I know it well.
I think it's significant, though. It really is an actual thing that's happening. And there has to be words to describe, the shift in the culture that these digital technologies are causing. And I think that's a long one, but I think it's a really good one.
Ah, continuous partial attention. And who hasn't witnessed that? Gregory, give us your yottabyte definition there.
Yottabyte is it's about 2 million gigabytes, which is about 10 times bigger than your average hard drive. We call it the super big gulp data of a super big gulp of the data world. You could hold all of the Library of Congress, YouTube, Capitol Records, anything in the world with that.
So there was a time when a megabyte was a big deal, and then gigabyte, and then people talked about terabytes, and now you're talking about it basically a number so large, Paul Hemp, this is a signal, though, maybe, if technology allows it, of going to a time when the restraints are really off in terms of data volume and what we can do with it.
Interestingly, it's a signal that was signaled even earlier by when Google named itself, which originally meant a one with a million zeros after it,
right,
or something like that. One of the things that I think is, from our point of view, is we're trying to communicate useful management ideas to people, but also to communicate them in a way that are provocative and grab people's attention. You're playing with this tension between the catchy phrase and the somewhat more plodding but transparent phrase. And I'm working on a piece right now where Scott Cook, the founder of Intuit, is talking about how people's voluntary contributions, the things that people are doing on the web, contribute to the benefit of the users and companies. He had offered the term netelligence, is this. Well, to my mind, that was pushing too – it was trying too hard. And so we backed off, pulled off a little bit, and we're calling them user contribution systems, which also has kind of a jargony feel, but at least is more descriptive. So you're always playing with that tension between catching people's attention and making clear exactly what you mean.
And some are like user-generated content is a real term that's used all the time.
Sure.
It's very clunky in a lot of ways, but it does describe users are generating content. I prefer those a lot better, and I don't mind them as much. As to the name like Google, I mean, that name worked. Unfortunately, there's a million companies now in Silicon Valley with all sorts of goofy names. You don't know what they do. I mean, there's Oodle, there's Mevo, there's Widgix, there's, you know, it just goes on, and you wonder how they, you know, yesterday a new search engine was launched. It didn't work out so well because it sort of broke down and people don't really like it. It was supposed to compete with Google. And it was called Cool, but it was spelled C-U-I-L, and nobody knew how to pronounce it. Is it Cool? You know, I mean, like, instead of being very clear of what you are, I mean, there's only
too cool for school.
Cool, yeah, exactly. I mean, Google and Yahoo, what the heck do they mean? But, you know, at least they've become real. What does Kleenex mean, sort of? But I think that it's very hard in the effort to become unusual or catchy. You don't really communicate what your company does. And I think actually Facebook is a very good word that does communicate what it is.
Mm.
Or MySpace. That's really clear.
Right.
MySpace on the Internet. So I think those tend to do a little better rather than these like it's like literally it's like Oodle, Google, Mebo, Weibo, Zeebo, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
So, Kleenex, so that may take us to one of your words, Gorky Bergman, phrases, mucus trooper, that worker who shows up at work with a cold or the flu and comes to work anyway, not everybody happy to see him. Let's go to Grand Junction, Colorado, and Glenn. Glenn, you're on the air.
How are you doing today?
Well, pretty good. What do you know there, Glenn?
I'm just wondering if the fellow put in his book the phrase pretzel logic.
Pretzel logic. We can kind of picture it. How do you understand its meaning, Glenn?
Well, what goes around comes around. It's the bullet you get for the bullet you give, more or less kind of thing.
Right, or maybe logic that ends right back up where it started. I don't know. Gregory Bergman, how about it?
Yeah, well, we don't have it in here, but it's certainly a great term, and I think we've all been, we've all had to deal with the circular logic, especially whether in business or with anyone. So that's certainly a very useful and descriptive term.
Let's go to Rye, New York, and Eric. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom Gregory.
Hi, what have you got?
Hi.
I work in a very small investment firm as an analyst, and because our firm is so small, we have no maintenance workers. So the only way we know how to fix things in the office is by using what is called percussive maintenance, which happens to be my favorite business lingo term that I'd like to share with you guys.
Now, wait a minute. Yes, please. Definition, please.
Sure. It's the fine art of whacking the crap out of an electronic device to get it to work again.
So percussive maintenance, just bang on the side of your computer or your fridge or whatever else it may be. I love it. Eric, thanks very much for that. Keep banging on it. Let's get one more here from Burlington, Vermont. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi there. I am taking a slightly dimmer view of a lot of this terminology. Your panelists and several of the people who have called in have talked about the fact that these words are descriptive. They're describing what's happening in the business world today. And I think that's sort of the fundamental problem with a lot of these words. They are merely reactive. They're describing what's going on for no point other than to coin a term to make someone sound intelligent.
As opposed to what, Mike?
Well, earlier in the conversation, there was a comparison made to academic jargon.
Mm-hmm.
And I am in the academic world, and Lord knows there's plenty of jargon to be had here.
Yep.
But so much of the jargon within the academic world is not merely descriptive. It's an attempt to create a label for a new conceptual category, something that is newly theorized, as opposed to pointing at something going, hey, that looks slightly different than version 1.0, and slapping a new name on it so that we can
feel as if we've accomplished something by recognizing it.
So you're putting up a flag for academia's intellectual superiority and ambition here.
Well, I hadn't planned to, but it sounds as if I am. But it seems as if it's too simplistic a comparison between academic jargon and the business world jargon. The business world jargon doesn't seem to become anything. It doesn't do anything. It merely makes us feel good about it.
Our time is short, but let us pick it up. Paul Hemp, you're at the Harvard Business Review. How about it?
Well, that's actually made me think. We ran an interview several years ago with a professor of American literature at Harvard, Marjorie Garber, who talked about the difference between academic buzzwords and business buzzwords. And actually, she has come away after a study, did a book on it, that she found actually business buzzwords. She came in knowing very little about business and somewhat skeptical about their use, and came away somewhat admiring of the use of terms like cash cow and golden parachute, which just said it all in two words. And so it was kind of interesting to get her perspective from outside of the business world.
But you've got to watch out. Yes, one more here. Bozo explosion. Greg Bergman, a rapid increase of incompetent employees at a particular company. Nobody wants it.
Nobody wants that. And a lot of people, all of us have been subject to that. But I did want to touch on these business terms do represent real concepts. Fallen angel, you know, another one, two words for, you know, a stock that's fallen from its all-time high. Jim Cramer, all he talks about are fallen angels. Sleepers. So I think these stock market terms in particular are short, and they really do represent concepts. I don't think they're reactive. So.
Well, we're going to have to put some pants on it, and I hope nobody takes a haircut, but we figured out what makes you tick, Gregory Bergman. Anyway, we appreciate your pulling all these together in BizWords, the new book, Gregory, and thank you very much for sharing some of them with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Kara Swisher with the Wall Street Journal in San Francisco. Always great to have you. Thanks for being here, Kara.
Thanks a lot.
And Paul Hemp at the Harvard Business Review. Thanks for being here, Paul.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.